Today's program is brought to you by Brooklyn Cares Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest level of veterinary care to pets throughout the Clinton Hill neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York, and surrounding areas since its founding in 2008. For more information, visit brooklyncaresvet.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, and I'm known as the Food Healer. Welcome to the show. Today in the studio, I've got Amelia Deslongchamps, a cat advocate and caretaker of many a feral pod. Amelia does rescue, TNR, and fostering. In short, she's amazing, and I'm happy to have her on as a guest. Amelia does her work in Brooklyn, New York, and lives with her rescue cats and two dogs. Her work is never-ending, and I admire her drive and passion. I'm really excited to hear more about it. Hi, Amelia. It's great to have you here at Roberta's in beautiful downtown Bushwick. How are you today?
I'm great and very happy to be here and talking about this subject. There's a lot to be said on it.
And I'm thrilled you could make it, and I know you have a lot to say, so let's get started.
Great.
All right, so we're going to talk about cats in the city, specifically feline rescues, both feral and abandoned. However, before we do that, I want you to tell everyone how you got into rescue and what you were doing beforehand.
It's interesting. I was actually working for a hedge fund. completely unrelated. I wore suits.
Wow.
I got dressed up, commuted into Manhattan every day, and did all of that.
Wow.
Then with that whole financial collapse, I was laid off.
Mm.
I had had two cats, and I was like, oh, I've got all this extra time. I kind of wanted another cat. So financially, I was like, not the smartest move considering I'm not working right now. So I responded to an ad on Craigslist for fostering. And pretty much that's the last thing that I remember.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. I then didn't get one, but I got two foster kitties.
Mm-hmm.
The person who I started working with, she was just amazing.
Nice.
And I met people who was like, oh my God, I'm like you.
Oh, cool.
I finally found where I fit in, and those two kitties then multiplied to numerous numbers, and within, I'd probably say, like 4 months, I was certified to do TNR, and I've been doing it ever since.
That's amazing. So was it a difficult transition from corporate life to what you do now?
No. Honestly, it was one of the easiest things. I was miserable with corporate. You know, I wasn't happy, but it was a job. It paid the bills.
Yeah.
And I've never been more poor now, but I've also never been happier.
But this, that says a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I just found where, you know, what people say, like, you fit in.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually fit in, and this is like my home.
Yay. Oh, that's so nice. So what is the definition of a feral cat?
A feral cat is basically a cat that's not socializable. A feral cat can be born on the street, or it can be used to be somebody's cat. It can be an abandoned cat or a cat that just got out.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it reverts to its wild state where it doesn't want that contact with people, either from fear or anything like that. But it's a cat that is essentially a wild animal.
So you were saying like a domesticated cat that somebody owned can go back to being feral.
Yes.
How long does that take?
It depends on the cat. You know, like, there's hard to stay specifics when dealing with, you know, like socializing or just the opposite of going back to feral.
Mm-hmm.
But like everyone, if they have like a fractious cat, they call it, I've got a feral cat. No, you've got a fractious cat. A feral cat is not handleable.
Okay.
A feral cat will flee from you. They don't want anything to do with you.
Right.
If a cat on the street kind of bites you, that's not a feral cat.
Yeah.
That's somebody's mean cat.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Okay. And it's also that a feral cat, like if you have a domesticated cat, you don't need to be in fear that all of a sudden you're going to wake up one day and have a wild cat in your house. This is a domesticated cat that was abandoned, who's been on the street for a while.
Exactly. Okay. They reverted for survival mode, essentially.
Okay. And how many feral cats do you think there are in New York City at this point?
It's hard to get an exact number. At a minimum, you can say maybe 500,000.
Wow.
I mean, if you think about the size of each borough and how many cats and kittens can basically be born to one female cat, they can go into heat three to four times a year.
Wow.
And produce anywhere from 1 to 8 kittens, depending on how healthy that cat is.
Wow.
That multiplies pretty quickly, and you just need one male for one female.
Wow. And what's the gestation time for a cat?
About 2 months.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they can also get pregnant while they're nursing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I know they can have multiple fathers. So if you have a litter of, like, you know, a striped cat, a tabby cat, a Siamese cat, it just means that mama had a lot of baby daddies. But
pretty much. It wasn't really quite her choice, but there were a lot of daddies out there. I find in a lot of colonies, though, that mm-hmm. you have one or two males who like to dominate that colony.
Okay.
I had one colony that I was feeding on a regular basis, and he had a harem of 5 females.
Really?
And when I would go in to feed, he would sit there and block the way, and I'd have
kidding.
To have a standoff and then shake and rattle the bags to have permission to go through and feed them.
Wow.
It was the most satisfying feeling when I trapped him.
Wow. So do you think the feral cat situation in New York is getting better or worse? Or do you think it's just at like a constant?
I want to say it's getting better, but yeah. I really think it's at a constant.
Okay.
You know, the people who do rescue and are involved in TNR, we do a lot of education. Mm-hmm. And just everyone that we meet, it's one thing that we talk about.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, it's like breathing for us.
Yeah.
With that, you know, the animal care and control, we've also been able to work with them. Mm-hmm. So they notify like neighborhood cats when an ear-tipped cat comes in. An ear-tipped cat is that signature left ear tip that mm-hmm. knows that that cat has been fixed and it's a feral cat that's been returned.
And so what does the ear look like for someone who's never seen a tip?
Basically, it's always on the left ear,
okay.
and there's about a quarter of an inch, sometimes more or less, that the ear is just cut directly horizontally off.
So the ear is flat on top.
Exactly.
Okay.
They used to notch them mm-hmm. long ago, but then it started looking like they were bite wounds or fights, and
yeah.
it was hard to tell if it was a notch or if it was an injury.
Okay.
And that's where they just started taking the left tip off. So it's the universal sign that that cat's been fixed.
So when you're out there doing TNR, you're basically grabbing whatever doesn't have an ear tip.
Exactly. And okay. then if something comes into the trap, that's the first thing that we look for
mm-hmm.
if there's an ear trip.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an ear tip, then we release that cat and try to get another.
Okay. And for people that don't know, what does the term TNR mean?
TNR means trap, neuter, return. So basically, we trap the cats,
mm-hmm.
we get them fixed, and you release them. It's very important to release them where you picked them up. That bringing a cat, getting it fixed, and releasing it to another location
mm-hmm.
can be a death sentence for that cat. They don't know how to survive there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know who their enemies are. They don't know where their food sources, water sources, anything like that. So it's very important to release it where you trapped it.
And with its own pod, too, so that, you know, it knows all the other cats, and the cats know them. And so.
It is. Colonies, the bigger the colony, the better that they survive. They look out for each other. They're able to grab their food sources.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, what every rescuer wants is what's called a managed colony.
Okay.
A managed colony is where everyone is fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You feed them on whatever feeding schedule that you give them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when everyone's fixed, the benefits are you don't have the fighting. You don't have the spraying. So you don't have that horrible
Ugh.
Odor smell. Yeah.
That's
the one
huge.
That everyone walks down the street
yes.
and it's like, there's a cat.
It smells like cat pee around here.
Exactly. And you don't have all of the kittens that are wandering
yeah.
into the street, getting sick, dying, etc.
Yeah.
But a managed colony, they want to protect their colony so they don't let outsiders in.
Mm.
So that's the benefit of a managed colony.
Okay.
It's almost impossible to do because new ones always come in.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier to take care of one or two
exactly.
than 15 or 16.
Exactly. Wow. And what's the lifespan of a feral cat in the city?
In an unmanaged colony where it's trying to survive on its own,
mm-hmm.
if it's lucky, a couple of years.
Wow.
You know, you have diseases that they can get.
Yep.
But in a managed colony, if they're lucky, maybe 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
I've been blessed on one of my colonies. I call him Gray Boy. I try not to give my ferals names.
Yeah.
They kind of go by little girl, little boy,
mm-hmm.
Gray Boy, things like that. He's been there for at least 6 years.
Wow.
And he's still going strong.
Good.
He looks at me and he will not come within 15 feet of me. We have our distance. We respect it. I put down the food, slowly back away, and he goes and eats.
Perfect. Perfect. So what should people do when they find ferals in their neighborhood?
First, they have to find out if it is a feral.
Okay.
Because a feral and a scared cat can immediately look the same.
Mm-hmm.
They might run or they might back away and they don't want to come close.
Okay.
So a feral cat if they don't know you, like I said before, they're not going to stay near you.
Right.
A scared cat may initially want to run, but then it might be like, oh, wait a second. And if you're calm, kind of get down on ground level, kneel down and try to talk to it, mm-hmm. it might come near you.
Okay.
And then if it's a feral, what they want to do is, does it have an ear tip?
Right.
If it's got an ear tip, awesome. You probably belong to somebody's colony. You're good.
Right, right.
If it doesn't, then I recommend everyone to learn how to trap them and fix them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we talked about that a little bit about before in the show and in terms of how busy you guys are.
Nonstop?
Yeah. And like, can you tell us kind of like what a day is like for you when you're seeing the ferals and doing all the TNR and trying to, you know, go to your job as well? Like, how long is your day?
Oh, you mean we don't do this 24/7? We actually have to work full time? This doesn't pay?
I can make a call to your boss and see if we can arrange something. But you know.
So for me, an average day is I normally have to wake up at least an hour and a half earlier just to take care of everybody in my home. Mm-hmm. Then I walk to work along my colonies to make sure I don't have anyone who's been injured on my way to work. Mm-hmm. And I have one colony that I'm able to leave a feeder. The others I have to feed on a regular basis. Mm. Then I go to work for my 10-12 hour day. Mm-hmm. Then I have my specific feeding times. If it's a feeding day, I bring my food to work. And then on my way home, I make sure everyone's fed and watered. And I scan to see if any newcomers are in there. If I have new kittens, anything like that, then I go home and spend another hour taking care of everybody. Mm-hmm. And then I get to eat my food.
Wow.
And in between all of this is I get the many emails, texts, calls, mm-hmm. basically like, hey, I found this cat. Hey, I got a cat question.
Yeah.
So spring through fall for a TNR rescue person, it's nonstop and we don't sleep.
Wow. Wow. And you work in a vet's office during the day. So you're just like cat, 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 dog, cat, 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 cat.
I live and breathe it. It's a good thing I love it.
Seriously. You got lucky on that one, girl.
I did.
All right. So what happens if someone finds a kitten?
Good question, because that's one that I get every day at work and every rescuer gets. Everyone finds a kitten. Hey, where can I bring it? Can a rescue take it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the wait list for a rescue group for kitten season is about 50 cats long.
Wow.
There's just so many kittens and there's not enough rescuers out there. Mm. One of the best things that you can do is, one, if you find a kitten, is don't pick it up immediately.
Okay.
The mother might be in the process of moving them, which happens a lot. She has to, due to weather conditions or if the area becomes unsafe or needs to move them closer to a food source or safety if there's a cat that's being aggressive towards her. So a lot of movement goes on when a mother has its litter.
Okay.
So keep an eye on them. And, you know, I give it at least like 4 to 6 hours. If you don't see the mother coming around, if that kitten is still there, then you can take the kitten. But make sure you keep a distance, because if you're too close, the mom's not going to come by also.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. And that's one of people's biggest, like, oh, I'm going to sit right next to this kitten and watch it, make sure nothing happens.
Right.
The mom's not going to come if you're right there.
Right.
So if the mom doesn't come when you're a far enough distance away, then you can take in the kitten. Now, when you take in a kitten, you have to determine, is it a bottle baby or is it old enough to eat on its own?
And can you tell that? I mean, I know you can tell it by examining the cat physically, but are there any, like, huge indicators for people that don't know as much about cats as you do?
There are. One, if the eyes aren't open, if it can't really walk well, that's a good inclination. It's going to be a bottle baby. Kind of. I also, you know, some people, cats on the street born are going to be smaller than a domestic cat born in a home. It's nutrition. They're going to be smaller.
Okay.
So if a cat's kind of fitting in the palm of your hand, it still might want to nurse.
Okay.
But one of the easiest ways is sometimes you have a street kitten 3 weeks old in a home environment. That kitten's going to want a bottle or want to nurse off of its mom.
Yeah.
For survival, that kitten may learn how to eat earlier. So the easiest way is put down some wet kitten food, see if it wants to eat it.
Okay.
The other thing is, if you bring a kitten in, never, ever give that kitten milk.
Cow milk.
Yes.
So how about like soy milk or almond milk or rice milk?
No.
Okay.
Most cats, contrary to popular belief, are lactose intolerant.
Okay.
Milk, cow's milk, can destroy a kitten's gut. Now, if you're in a pinch, a lot of places now sell goat's milk.
Okay.
You can get goat's milk until you can get to the pet store and get a kitten replacer milk.
Good to know. really good to know. And if you're in Brooklyn, all the farmers markets have it, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's before, you know, like goat's milk, where do you get it?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, almost every grocery store even sells it.
Yeah, it's true, so. And health food stores too. So I'm talking to Amelia Deslongchamps, and we need to take a 1 minute break, and we'll be back talking more cats. It's pretty.
Flower to keep saving on my doorstep. And these are the habits that I can't understand. My rational reflexes stupefy my superstitious contraband.
Animal Instinct is brought to you today by Brooklyn Cares Veterinary Clinic. Since 2008, Brooklyn Cares has been providing exceptional veterinary care to pets throughout Brooklyn, New York. Led by doctors Timothy Mann and Stephanie Liff, the practice advocates a gentle, holistic approach to caring for your pet and offers an impressive breadth of basic and advanced healthcare services for your dog or cat. This modern practice, conveniently located in the Clinton Hill neighborhood of Brooklyn, is fully equipped with state-of-the-art equipment to ensure that your pet receives the highest quality care, regardless of whether they're sick or injured, or simply visiting for annual wellness checkup. For more information, visit brooklyncaresvet.com.
And we are back. So we're here talking with Amelia Deslongchamps, all about cats, this crazy cat lady rescue. She's amazing. What did I want to ask you? I wanted to ask you, what are the mistakes that the average person does when they find out that they've got feral cats living nearby?
Freak out.
Okay.
Feral cats can be really helpful. One, rodent control.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it's a feral cat. You can almost guarantee you're not going to have a lot of rats around.
Totally.
Building that I used to live in, we had ferals right behind the building. And it was wonderful. They'd kill the rats. What wasn't so wonderful was they would leave it for us to show, hey, I'm doing my job.
Totally. Like, ah!
Yeah, not that great. But, you know, it's not fun to remove the dead rat. But it's great for rodent patrol.
Yep.
The other thing is trapping, removing.
Okay.
Like, they have animal care and control come and pick up the cats. Mm-hmm. Or they want the cats gone.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is feral cats or street cats, abandoned cats, they're finding an area for a reason.
Yeah.
So if they're finding your location favorable, if you remove that cat, one, if you bring it to animal care and control, mm-hmm. especially if it doesn't have an ear tip, it's pretty much guaranteed a death sentence.
Yeah.
They're not going to be friendly, they're not going to be sociable, and they're going to euthanize.
Yes.
The other thing, once you remove them, another cat's just going to come right back in because they're finding something favorable in your area.
Totally.
So maybe your trash isn't being kept cleaned up or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can always look on what in that area is what's making them want to come.
What's like really sexy and attractive to a cat in those kind of areas?
Stinky trash and shelter.
Okay. Okay, cool. And should people feed them?
I don't mind feeding if you want to do the occasional, hey, I see you, you look hungry, I want to help you out.
Okay.
Life is hard on the street for them. You know, they survive a lot off of chicken bones and who knows what else they find in the trash.
Yeah.
But you have to be really careful because there's a saying in rescue, it's really cheesy, but it's very true.
Okay.
Feeding equals breeding.
Mm.
It's easy to remember, but if you keep feeding and if you're not getting them fixed, you're going to have healthier cats.
Yeah.
The more you feed, the more cats are going to be like, hey, we smell something.
Yeah.
More cats are going to come. You're going to have more kittens. And in a very short amount of time, like a few months, you could have a significant problem.
Wow.
So if you're going to feed regularly, make sure you get those cats fixed.
And if have you seen, like, for cats that aren't being fed consistently, are they not as fertile as, like, the fatties that are being fed that every day?
No.
Okay.
You know, if you're malnourished and you're ridden with diseases and you're just, you're not healthy, it's going to be harder to get pregnant. And if they do get pregnant, the kittens may not survive.
Good point. So if someone, if I see a cat that I don't know, how can I tell if it's friendly or not?
Tell if it's friendly, just get down on all fours, or not on all fours, but kneel down, you know, get on ground level with the cat very calmly. Just kind of sit and hold your hand out.
Okay.
And just be very calm and still. See if that cat's going to come near you. If you have any food on you, any meat-based product or something, you know, you can always run to the corner store, offer that. If the cat comes to the food, now a feral cat, if it's hungry enough, it might come to the food, but a friendly cat, you might be able to touch it.
And okay.
If, or a lot of friendly cats are going to be like, hey, you're going to be my new parent.
Totally.
Rub up against you and pet you. So if you find that kind of cat, you know, it's dangerous for them to be on the street.
Yep.
But the problem is rescues are also full. So before you take them in, be prepared that you might have to, if you can't keep that cat.
Yeah.
If you can foster it, help a rescue out. If you can foster a cat, or if you know a friend who might be able to foster a cat that you found, a lot of rescues will be willing to help and find the home for the cat.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is they just don't have enough homes and places. Most rescues don't have shelters. They work through foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
So the more foster homes that are out there, the more a rescue can save lives.
And so let's say you find a cat on the street and you decide you want to keep this cat.
Yay!
What should you do?
First thing that you should do is take it to the vet.
Okay.
Check to see if it has a microchip. Microchips are becoming very common, and it's the, one of the best ways to identify an animal.
Okay.
A microchip can really save a life. If it doesn't have a microchip, then the next thing you want to do is check lost and found ads. Look in your neighborhood. Did somebody actually lose their pet? You know,
that's a good point.
Some get out. So if it's, if you find that it's not a lost pet, it doesn't have a microchip, then you just want to take the next steps to make sure that your cat is healthy. So you want to do it its vaccines.
Okay.
Check to see if it has feline AIDS or leukemia.
Yeah.
Another test that I really love and I think can be beneficial for future health is testing for Bartonella, or what's also commonly known as cat scratch fever.
Yeah.
It is a treatable condition, and by treating it, everyone is healthier.
Yep.
And then doing a standard fecal test to make sure there's no worms or parasites.
And people can get Bartonella too, right?
They can get it. Okay. It's more like the immune compromised or children.
Okay.
A healthy person can get it. I've gotten it. Shocker, I know.
How hard was it to get rid of?
I didn't do anything for it.
Oh, you're kidding.
You know, I'm pretty healthy. I think I've also got a pretty good tolerance to getting bit and scratched.
Yeah.
So what happens is if you get scratched, you might develop a little pustule at the base of the scratch and might develop like flu or cold-like symptoms.
Okay.
Depending on the person's immune system, you know, you might have to go on antibiotics.
Okay.
So if you're not getting better and if you see that, go to your doctor.
Yeah.
It is treatable.
Okay.
For me, it was just like, I felt under the weather for a few days and then I was fine.
You're a lucky lady, boy.
Keep getting bit and scratched. Build up that tolerance.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep doing it. You'll be fine. So what are the challenges in TNR and rescue?
There's two main challenges. With TNR, a lot of it is accessibility. You know, the ferals love to be behind fences where you can't really put the traps, and they love to be on busy streets where people are walking by and don't want to go into it. And then you have the cooperation of businesses who, you know, I have some warehouses that it's been a couple of years and finally they're like, yes, we'll let you in. We'll work with you. But it took years to build that relationship.
Wow.
So with doing TNR, those are your main issues.
Okay.
With rescue, it's just burnout. It's it's nonstop between, you know, the amount that we see out there, the limit that we're able to do, the injured and abused animals. It's mentally just draining.
Yeah.
And a lot of us just burn out before we're, our time.
I totally couldn't do what you guys do. I mean, I admire so much what you guys do, but I would wind up just like, and I'm going to save that one and that one and that one. And I mean, I can't even walk into CACC. Like, I can't. I'm way too sensitive for that kind of stuff. So I'd really admire the fact that you guys, you know, have the guts and the bravery to do this.
Thank you. It does. I would like to say everybody can do it. I think everybody can help save one or two cats or dogs.
Yeah.
But it does take a special person. you know, we are, people want to call us catty, have attitudes, but we have to have a tough exterior
to
survive this. The amount that we see and what we have to do.
Yeah.
We cry all the time. Yeah. It's heartbreaking to us, but it's more heartbreaking for us not to do anything.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between a rescuer and just the average person.
Totally.
We don't have a choice in this. Once I realized and I fell into this, I realized all along, this was my life. I mean, like growing up, I rescued all the little wild animals in my backyard.
Really?
Like some people are just born to do this.
Yeah.
And I finally found what I'm meant to do.
That's so cool. And it's, I mean, and like you said, you have to be born into this. You have to totally love this because, I mean, there's no way that if you didn't, there you could continue doing this.
No.
I mean, really. And it's just, you know, things of, like, for example, the abuse case that went on, was it a couple weeks ago, about that cat that got kicked?
Yeah.
And it became such a huge national
deal.
Can you talk about that a little bit, or do you want to?
No, absolutely. There's mixed feelings with that case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mixed feelings are for the average rescuer that we see this on a regular basis, unfortunately, and it's not publicized. You know, great that person videotaped it and actually did something about it.
Yeah.
Bravo to that person to bringing it to the media and to the spotlight. You know, a lot of the small rescue groups where you have a ton of independent rescuers or you have these little groups that are just based off, you know, 3, 4, 5 people.
Yeah.
We're exhausted doing what we're doing. And we're the little ones that are the ones that are out there making the differences in the neighborhood, building the relationships with the community members and allowing us and teaching them and educating them. And then what's frustrating for the small rescue groups is then you have groups like North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows North Shore's name.
Yeah.
That they come in, swoop in. Oh, yeah, we're going to trap them, get all of the media spotlight.
Right.
Then they, what I think every small rescue group and main rescuers were horrified at, you have this injured cat in the trap, petrified, while everyone's posing for pictures uncovered.
Ooh.
Now, yes, it's all about this cat, but you have to make sure you pose for your photo opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, where is North Shore now? Are they in that community working on education? No, they took the spotlight. Fine, they got the cat the help that it needed, and they're going to find it a home.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the dozens and dozens of cats that are left in that neighborhood that they're like, yep, we got our cat and we're gone.
And that's where
the small rescuers are really having issue with this topic.
It's a great point because, you know, it's not, this isn't the one cat that was kicked in this area, you know, and it's a really, really good point. And a lot of people don't realize how many animals that are on the street get abused regularly.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's why I couldn't do this. Right there. That's exactly why.
You know what? There's a lot of sad things to this, but you have those rewarding cases where you have that hard cat that just turns around and then seeks that affection.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this one cat that was being fed for a while and it was in one of our colonies and she got a very fun name.
Mm-hmm.
Some ferals, they'll come close to who that feeder that they can trust.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some ferals that we can't necessarily touch, but they're going to get close to us.
Yeah, yeah.
So this cat loved her food. Apparently, one day I wasn't feeding her quick enough.
Oh, no.
And I'm reaching down to dump the food out, and she bites me.
You're kidding.
Yeah. My first reaction was, you fluffy bitch. The name kind of stuck.
Awesome.
To this day, that's her name.
Awesome.
But she's a case that is one of the reasons that we do this. A coffee shop built up in that area, in the little alley where we were feeding them. We had a lock and everything. We kept it clean. We had our shelters without even posting a sign to notify us. They took off the lock, replaced it with their own, and locked us out and refused to let us feed the cats there.
Wow.
And then when we would try to feed them on the outside, because these cats were used to regular feedings, they threatened to call the cops.
Wow.
One, it's against the law. It's not against the law, I should say, to feed a feral cat.
Okay.
By preventing it, it is a Class A misdemeanor.
Really?
Yes. Little unknown facts that a lot of people don't know.
Good to know.
So read your bylaws. It is actually out there.
Wow.
But basically, their territory got destroyed, and they weren't there. So we were just heartbroken over that. A lot of the cats, they did find other areas to feed. We moved it a little bit. But this fluffy bitch, this was her home for years. Ugh. We were feeding her for at least 3 years. We saw her when she was, you know, a little six-month-old kitten growing up.
Wow.
So we ended up being able to trap her.
Good.
She is, luckily, one of those ferals that, you know, we decided we would either find a sanctuary for her or see if she wanted to live in home. My rescue partner, she ended up taking her, and it was just, it was destroying her knowing that she was out there.
Yeah, yeah.
She's let her pet her now.
You're
she
kidding.
Loves being indoors. She still is obsessed with her food. So she hears that little treat bag. She comes running right up to her and is chirping and purring. It's like, I want my food. So she's one of the ferals that has adapted to indoor life.
Nice.
And enjoys it. Nice. So those rewarding stories, the ones that we can save the lives and find homes, that's why we do it.
Yeah. And that's huge. And it's so funny with the feral. Like when you get a cat that was feral, once they're inside and they're like, this is kind of nice.
Yeah.
You know, and they never want to go outside again for the most part. You know,
a cat who has lived a rough life on the street, most of them don't want to go back outside. It's those little kittens that go, oh, what's outside? I want to go outside.
Yeah. And actually, this is a perfect lead in. I've got a question for you from Megan.
Okay.
I'm just going to read what she wrote, so it's going to be sounding like it's me.
All right.
I have a feral kitty who's come so far, but I'm getting nervous as spring approaches. She's always at the windows. I'm afraid she'll run outside at the first chance she gets. So I guess my question is a feral kitten always destined to be an outdoor cat? And do you have any tips for encouraging my dear kitten to stay inside where it's safe?
It's a really good question. And it's a little bit tricky because some cats, they do like the outdoors, and they're not happy being inside. Now, it sounds like every spring, she misses that, all of the birds and the new life coming. You know, cats are hunters. They like that chase and that fun.
Good point.
So I would recommend to her, if she has the ability, if she can put a bird feeder outside of her window, it serves a couple purposes. One, birds get the get fed, and she gets a little kitty TV.
Nice.
I've got a bird feeder on my fire escape.
Do you really?
And when the birds come, you have all the cats sitting there and they're chirping and like they're doing that little dancing and making all these sounds that you only hear when they're stimulated, and they are so excited to see that happen.
That's so funny.
I would try to provide stimulation for her to simulate hunting.
Okay.
You know, see if she can get some toys in her home that might simulate hunting to give her a little bit of more of that freedom and, you know, like make the window inviting to her so she can lay in the sun and get that fresh air.
So what do you think about for Megan's cat? Do you think this is a good cat to leash train or no?
No.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of leash training.
Okay.
I know some people are big proponents of it. If cats are meant to be on leashes, they'd be on leashes all the time. We'd see it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Cats can get out of those harnesses so easily
that,
you know, you've got your cat, it's on the leash, it's going to get freaked out and then it's going to go run. The other thing is you walk in a cat on a leash down the street, you don't know what some dog is going to do.
Yeah.
And they can be a lot quicker. And then that cat gets scared, that leash comes out of your hand.
Totally.
There's too many unpredictable things that can happen.
Yep.
And putting the cat on the leash, it's not going to satisfy her craving to be outside, to be free and hunt.
Good point.
So I would just try to, you know, get things in, you know, leave the top part of your window open so you have some flies come in. Let her hunt inside.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we have one of our cats goes on a leash, and she's been going on a leash now for years, probably 2 years, maybe even more than that. And you know, we have a routine. She goes down the stairs. She eats a little bit of grass. You know, she has like a 50-foot radius, basically, of how far she'll go. So, you know, we're never going to be like walking to the market with the cat.
Right.
Never.
And it sounds like your cat, you know, she's got her little area. She's happy and it's in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
But the main percentage of cats, first of all, they think they want to go outside.
Oh, yeah.
And then
when
they get outside, forget about it.
Yeah.
So you do have a small percentage of cats who actually do well on a leash. So if somebody does want to do it, get the cat used to the harness inside.
Daytime.
Slowly introduce them to elements that can scare them in a controlled environment so you know that leash is secure. And then, but it's not designed to walk down the street or bring to the park.
No, and it's totally like, when we're walking her, she's dictating where we're going. Like, you're not like, okay, we're going to go to the trash can now. Like, no, you're not. You're going to go stand by this patch of grass. You know, yeah. You can't, it's not walking a dog. It's nowhere near like walking a dog.
No.
And so, and what we've done is she always wanted to go outside, but now we've created a monster because on nice days, all we get is meow, scratch, 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 meow, scratch, scratch, scratch. Like, every 10 seconds until we actually take her outside. So if you do decide to do this, know that this could be really annoying in the long run.
Well, that's an excellent point, because that's when you create an indoor cat that isn't used to being outdoors and then you introduce them to the outdoors,
yeah.
They're going to want it. And cats are completely happy staying as indoor cats.
Yeah, they are.
Would they be happy outdoors? Yes. But the city is not an environment.
Yeah.
There are too many risks between cats carrying leukemia or FIV. You have other animals and dogs out there to be free outside.
Yeah.
If you really love your cat, keep it safe.
Seriously. Seriously. So do you get paid to do rescue and TNR and all that?
Why, you mean that I pay to do it?
Well, no, like, you know, like if you foster a sick cat or one that needs surgery, like who pays for this? How are you able to accomplish what you do?
Oh, out of our own pocket.
Wow.
There are a lot of, like, there's groups that they do fundraisers, mm-hmm. they get donations and things like that, but those donations only go so far.
Yeah.
Everything that we do is, this is our love and our passion. We do this out of our own pocket. There's, when I said, like, we pay to do it. There's no getting paid to do this.
Right.
Most of us go in debt, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got that cat that I've taken cats in that have had tail amputations and, you know, sometimes they need a leg amputated.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, even if it's a feral cat with a leg amputated, they can't really defend themselves properly outside. So there are some good sanctuaries. If anyone ever decides, you know, check with some good rescue groups and make sure it is a certified, like, legit sanctuary that you've visited. Fortunately, there's a lot of sanctuaries that start off meaning well, who don't end well.
Mm.
But, yeah, we paid to do this all, and it's just for a love.
It's amazing. All right, and so now, here's a question that I've heard, oh my God, for years.
Uh-oh.
Why do adoption places make you fill out all these long forms and check all your references? If people are so desperate to place these cats, why do they make it so hard?
Because we just want to torture you. You know, we just have nothing better to do with our time. We do it for a reason.
Yeah.
One, I'm sorry you don't want to hear it, but we're going to do a background check on you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sick people out there, and there's a lot of animal abusers.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of people who pose and then give cats to dog fighting rings and other things. So, yes, we're, one, going to do a background check on you. Two, we want to make sure you want to take the time to fill an application.
Seriously.
My adoption application is 8 pages.
I know. I've done it. It's no joke.
It's not. But there's a lot of reasons. One is sometimes, like, I get a lot of information when I adopt out a cat to somebody just by talking to them.
Yeah.
So the application is pretty much just redundant. It just puts in writing, I will never declaw my cat. I will make sure my cat stays safe, et cetera, et cetera. I will not give the cat away to anyone if I cannot keep it. I will notify you. So there's a lot of those questions. But one of the reasons I make it 8 pages that you have to sit there and read it, I want to make sure you are dedicated to adopting this cat for its life.
Yeah.
You know, things can happen. 2 o'clock in the morning, the cat might get injured or get sick and you have to end up in the emergency room. If you can't take the 15, 20 minutes to sit, read through, and fill out an application, I'm not going to give you a cat, because what makes you think you're going to sit a couple of hours in an emergency room?
Totally.
And the adoption fees that everyone's like, oh, you're charging for a cat? Yes.
Yeah.
You're getting a cat that has been fixed,
yeah.
that has been vaccinated, that you know is tested for leukemia and FIV.
Yep.
You want to pick up a cat from the street? Please go right ahead. Help us out.
Yeah.
You want to get a cat from the shelter? Save a life. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
Our fees, we don't make money. That just kind of goes towards our costs. We're not even making ends meet. That's going so we can save another life, feed more cats, and get the medical care that we need.
Well, I don't, I mean, I got a cat from you. I got Elroy from you, who's the bestest cat in the world. I love this cat. Thank you again for pushing him on me. I really didn't want him when I first met him, but he's turned into the perfect, perfect cat.
I do know best.
You're really good at this. You're really, really good. I'll tell you. My question to you is in terms, oh no, and I totally just forgot it. Ah!
You got away from me. Adoption fees. Time.
I don't remember. Oh, that's awful. I'm so sorry, Amelia. What I was thinking about was just the fact that so many people want pets like spontaneously, like, oh, look, a kitten, let's get it, you know, and it's true. If you're not going to take that time to read this form and fill everything out, then, you know.
And that's the other thing. Like, a great rescue also won't just sit and adopt a cat out right there.
Yeah.
Those impulse adoptions or buys, however you want to say it, those don't always work out.
Yeah.
Because then you get the pet home and it's like, oh, well, I don't have the time for this. I don't have the money for this. So that's another one of our reasons why we charge an adoption fee. If you're going to pay for something, you're going to take better care of something that you paid for versus something sometimes that you got for free. And I do know there's like Bedford Community Cats.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always charge an adoption fee.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a wonderful group and they do a lot of good work.
Yeah.
They do massive amounts of TNR.
Wow.
They're incredible and they're a small group. They're very dedicated and hardworking. But they also take the time to screen through people.
Nice.
And while I have an adoption fee, I'll also have a flexible scale.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always set in stone that yes, you have to pay this money.
Yeah.
You know, if I think you are going to be that amazing home,
mm-hmm.
I am going to work with you.
Well, here's the question I forgot. I'm very excited.
Yay.
I remembered.
Okay.
So how much is a typical adoption fee from a rescue place?
Usually the average is anywhere from $75 to $125.
Okay. So let's say I find feral kitty on the street and I want feral kitty. So I take it to the vet. I get it neutered. I get it the shots. I get it all the blood tests. I get the fecal done. How much are we looking at there?
Depending on the vet, even at a cheap vet, doing all of that, you're looking at $400 to $500.
Okay, so, you know, this is why it's better to get one from a rescue place, because you're going to save yourself around $350 right there, and it's already done.
And most rescue places, the cats are in foster homes.
Yeah.
We know their personalities, so we're going to be able to better place a match with you.
Yeah.
Getting a cat off of the street, you don't really quite know what kind of behavior that cat is going to have.
No
it
kidding.
Could be a cat who hates the litter box.
Oh, seriously. Seriously.
So,
or like one that hates, you know, your kid or, you know, something
yeah.
like that.
And that's the great thing with rescue groups is the animals are in the foster home. So we can see how they interact with, like you said, kids or dogs or other cats.
Yeah.
And we're able to place it based on your lifestyle and personality.
And that's something else. Like if you really, really want a cat and you find a rescue person that you like, work with them. Because with like for the whole thing with my cat, Elroy, with Amelia. I mean, I wanted a second cat to keep my first cat company. And she was like, this cat is great. This cat is great. And when I met him, he was young. He was like 6 or 8 weeks old. And he was feisty. And I was like, I don't know if I want. He's kind of a pain in the neck, you know. And she was like, just take him. I was like, all right, we'll try him. He and my cat became instant friends. And so Amelia knew this about the cat. And, you know, was persistent enough with me to be like, just try it out and see what happens. If she didn't do that, I wouldn't have that cat, and we wouldn't have such a nice come home with two cats that really, really care for each other and don't fight and rip each other to shreds. And so you got to listen. These people know what they're talking about.
And the people looking to adopt have to be honest with us.
Yeah.
Don't hide any of your cat's bad habits or, you know, you want a cat so bad that you're not going to tell us what your true lifestyle is.
Yeah.
We're going to work with you and find that fit. We know our cats.
Yep.
You know, the other thing is you see a cat by its picture. Make sure you meet that cat and not to be like, oh, that's the cat I have to have.
No kidding.
Because you can meet that cat. And I've had it happen a couple of times. Like somebody would see my posting on, you know, like Craigslist or mm-hmm. Pet Finder, be like, oh my gosh, I'm in love with this cat. That is exactly the kind of cat that I've been looking for. They come into my home. They end up adopting a different cat.
Or it's like,
it's just because they like the picture doesn't mean the personality is going to match.
Totally.
You know, some people are like, oh, that's so corny. You have to have a connection. You do have to have a connection. And when you meet that pet, you find it.
You do. And the cats for some reason usually find you. Dogs you find, but cats are usually like, oh, hi, I'm yours now, you know?
Oh, yeah, especially street cats. They know how to pick someone.
Yeah, they do. They're really good at that.
It's like
a kitty, you know? Well, we are almost out of time. So before we go, Amelia, I wanted you to please list some of the rescue places that you like, some of the rescue people you like, organizations. So go for it.
Yay. I've already mentioned the Bedford Corners Community Cats. Empty Cages Collective are amazing.
Awesome.
They are a very strong no-kill philosophy. Now, all of these groups are a no-kill philosophy.
Okay.
Empty Cages PJ, who runs it, he's just so passionate about what he does.
Nice.
He pulls so many from the euthanasia list. And a lot of these groups pull from the euthanasia list.
God bless you.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. North Brooklyn Cats are great. You have Canine Castle, but they actually do a lot of cats as well.
Okay.
You have Social Tees in Manhattan.
Love Social Tees.
I do,
love
too.
Love Social Tees. They've been around forever.
Another one who's been around for a long time, too, is also located in Manhattan, is Angelical Cats.
Oh, yeah.
And what I like about them is they make you take a little course on nutrition.
Cool.
And, you know, just cat awareness to make sure you know what you're getting into. Big City Little Big Kitty Little City is another great group. Little tongue twister of a name. Brooklyn Animal Action. They're a relatively new group, but they're composed of a couple of other groups, and some of the members, they merge together to find their own group.
Awesome.
And then you've got Brooklyn Bridge Animal Welfare Coalition. And honestly, this is just such a small list.
Yeah.
You can go on Craigslist, adopt a pet, Pet Finder. Mm-hmm. And there are dozens and dozens of reputable nonprofit 501c groups.
Yep.
The great thing with nonprofit groups that are 501c, your adoption is tax deductible.
Yeah.
But you have, like me, I'm not a 501c. Mm-hmm. You know, it's me and my rescue partner, Hillary. We're a small group.
Yep.
And it's just not possible for us to be 501c. So your adoption isn't tax deductible.
Right.
But it is going towards
going
a good
far.
Cause.
Yeah, because you're not taking a salary either. All the money is going right back to the cats. I know.
Oh,
you.
Plus some.
So, yeah. So if anyone has any questions and would like to actually contact you directly, would you be willing to share your email?
I would love to.
Cool.
The email is Kitty Mafia Rescue.
I love it.
You know, we've broken a few laws trying to get our cats. There's no shame in what we do. Funny story, if we have time for a quick story.
Yeah, give me a quick one.
Okay, a quick one is one thing that I've learned with bolt cutters.
Oh, God.
Is it's a catchy little thing. So we had a spot where we had to use bolt cutters. So I went to the hardware store where I adopted a cat to the guy. So he was totally cool. So the catch with bolt cutters is you have to leave your ID to get the bolt cutters.
No.
It's not illegal to carry bolt cutters on the street.
Okay.
But it is illegal if you don't have ID. But you have to leave your ID to get the bolt cutters.
Oh, come on.
So make sure you take somebody with you.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer.
A little catch 22 on that.
Wow.
So the email is Kitty Mafia Rescue, Kitty Mafia Rescue at gmail.com.
Beautiful. Amelia, thank you so much for giving us all this information. I definitely want you back another time. We can continue this conversation for hours. I'm Celia Kutcher. If you're trying to find me, you can find me at foodhealer.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.